on the porch to say our private goodbyes while Justin goes ahead and starts the car. Shelby reaches out to give me a hug, even though I don't feel in a hugging mood right now. I'm just waiting for her to leave. That was so fun, Shelby gushes. Honestly, we should do it again soon. Definitely, I lie. I better get going. She looks down at her watch. The babysitter kicks up such a fuss if we're late. You're so lucky you don't have to deal with that. Though I bet you will soon, she giggles. How is that going anyway? I wish more than anything that I hadn't told Shelby that I was going off my hormonal birth control last year. Jay and I use a condom because I don't even want to contemplate that situation. I did think I would probably get pregnant fairly soon, and it's a tribute to how little sex we have that we are still child-free. Or maybe my womb is simply withered and dried up. Who knows? And it doesn't look like our sex life is improving. I had that glimmer of hope when Nate was up for it 2 days in a row, but ever since then, we have gone through our worst drought yet. The first Saturday of the month came along, and Nate complained his bad back was acting up. I'm starting to wonder if we will ever have sex again. No luck yet, I tell Shelby. She purses her lips. Maybe you should see a doctor? They have those infertility specialists, right? I don't need a doctor with lots of fancy degrees to tell me that intercourse is required to conceive a child. Yes, maybe we will. Shelby hugs me one more time. Then she hurries to her car to take her back to her perfect life. And I am left watching her drive away. As soon as the headlights of their Mercedes disappear into the distance, all the tensions drain out of my body. Thank God she's gone. And despite all her big talk about future dinners, she hates leaving her son at night. So I'm off the hook for at least another 6 months. Tomorrow is garbage day, so I go back into the house to empty the refuse from our meal tonight, and I grab the garbage bins and haul them out to the curb. It's a perfect end to my glamorous evening. Just as I get to the curb, I get this strange feeling, a prickling in the back of my neck, like somebody is watching me. I turn around and look up at the window to our bedroom to see if Nate is up there, but I don't see him. And then I hear a loud thump. I take a step back, scanning our front lawn, my heart pounding. I don't see anyone there, but I definitely heard a noise. Could it have been a wild animal? I've seen rabbits hopping around the yard, but that sounded awfully loud for a rabbit. Hello? I call out. I'm wearing a dress, which means I have no pockets. My phone is back in the house, and there isn't anything that could serve as a weapon in the vicinity. The only thing I could use would be my stiletto heels, though I'd rather a mugger take me down than wreck my pumps. I did take a self-defense class once, although sometimes I worry all it did was give me a false sense of confidence. If someone really did attack me, they could overpower me easily. I eye the front door to my house. It's probably less than 20 feet from where I'm standing. I could run. And then I see the rustling in the bushes. There's something there. It's no animal. I clearly see a shadow of a fully grown person. Someone is lurking in our bushes. And here I am, standing out on the curb in our quiet cul-de-sac in nothing but a scrap of a dress, a sitting duck. I consider screaming, but it occurs to me that if I do so, it might make the situation worse. Perhaps the intruder will feel a need to attack me to quiet me down. I glance behind me at the nearest house. Its lights are out. If I scream, will somebody notice before the attacker descends on me? I can't take that chance. I count to five in my head. As soon as I reach five, I take off running in the direction of my front door. The heel of my right stiletto nearly catches on the front steps, but I miraculously manage to right myself. The rustling sound gets louder, and I reach for the doorknob with a trembling hand. And it doesn't turn. No. I didn't lock it, did I? I don't even have my keys. Unless Nate locked it when I left the house? Why would he do that? Why would my own husband lock me out of the house? I twist harder, and this time the knob does turn. Thank God, it was just stuck. I push my way into the house, and before I slam my front door closed, I catch a glimpse of a figure darting across my front yard. And for a moment, I can make out her face in a slice of moonlight. It's Addie Severson. Chapter 44. Eve. I have never been quite this panicked in my entire life. I even removed my stilettos so that I can properly pace across the bedroom. This must be my 20th lap, and I don't feel any better. Are you sure it was her? Nate asks me. As soon as I got back into the house, I scurried up to the bedroom and told Nate what I saw outside. He is not upset enough to pace. He is not even concerned enough to climb out of bed. He is not the least bit perturbed that my student was crouched in the bushes outside our house. He thinks it was all in my head. I know what I saw, Nate. I stopped pacing to turn and glare at him. Addie was in the bushes. She was watching me, stalking me. Why would she do that? I clench my fists. I recognize that Nate does not have the same sort of contentious relationship that I have with that girl, but I'm getting awfully sick of him defending her. I should have followed my instinct and dragged her to the principal when I found out she cheated on the midterm. I should have nipped the whole thing in the bud. She hates me, I say. He laughs. Come on. Why would she hate you? I can see it in her eyes. I saw the flash of anger earlier today when I made Addie put away that sandwich. She was upset. But what am I supposed to do? Allow students to turn my classroom into the cafeteria? I can't compete with the sound of crunching potato chips. She's a teenage girl, and she's got raging hormones. I already caught her cheating, and she's never prepared for my class. Every time I call on her, she scowls at me. She scowls. Nate arches one eyebrow. That's your evidence. I plop down on the edge of the bed. Listen to me, Nate. We already know that girl was skulking around Art Tuttle's house. This is not exactly a far reach. I don't care if you believe me or not. I know what I saw. The conviction in my voice this time is somehow enough to wipe the teasing smile off his face. He sits up straighter in the bed. Okay. So, say it was her. What are you going to do?
I have to go to the principal.
The principal? That seems extreme.
Nate, I say through my teeth, the girl was in the bushes outside our house. Art already lost his job because of her. I'm not messing around here.
He's quiet for a moment, mulling this over. I don't understand what he is thinking about, though. This is an exceedingly delicate situation, and it has to be handled correctly. Getting the principal involved is the right thing to do.
I just don't want to cause more trouble for Addie, he says. You know, the other kids have ostracized her because of the situation last year.
Maybe she needs counseling, I say. It's the kindest thing I can say. I'd hate to say that Addie is simply a bad seed who could never be redeemed.
Counseling?
He twists his face like he just ate something sour.
Now you're going to get the girl sent to a shrink?
I don't understand why Nate is fighting me on this. If Addie is troubled, counseling will help her. If he is her advocate, why wouldn't he want her to get the help she needs? There isn't any stigma anymore in receiving counseling. I'm going to Higgins, I say. End of story. Nate climbs out of bed and settles down beside me at the edge of the bed. I'm not entirely sure what he's going to say, but it turns out he doesn't say anything at all. He just reaches out, places his hands on either of my shoulders, and starts massaging. What are you doing? I say.
It's been a long night, he says. You've seemed so tense lately, Eve, and I feel bad. I feel like it's my fault.
It's not your fault, I say, and it's only partially a lie. Nate kneads his fingers deeper into my flesh.
Does this help at all?
I want to tell him that I have no interest in a massage right now, but actually, it does feel quite nice. I hadn't realized how much tension was in my shoulders until he started rubbing them. I forgot how good Nate is at massages.
Lie down, he instructs me.
Obligingly, I lie down on the bed, on my stomach with my head in the pillow. Nate crawls into the bed next to me, and his fingers work at the muscles in my shoulders and back. All the tension I've been holding on to drains out of me. Against my will, I let out a little happy sigh.
Also, Nate adds, hearing all that baby talk tonight, I was thinking that we need to do a little better job trying.
He leans closer to me so that I can feel his hot breath on my neck.
You know?
Nate has seemed so completely disinterested in sex recently. It shocks me to hear that from him. But as he undoes the zipper on the back of my dress, I have no doubt about his intentions. Chapter 45. Addie.
It was a mistake going to Nathaniel's house last night. I should never have done it. I have never done anything like that before.
Okay, that's a lie. It's not even close to the first time I've gone to a teacher's house without them knowing. That's what got Mr. Tuttle into so much trouble. Ugh, I still feel awful about that. I don't know what I was doing outside Mr. Tuttle's house that night. I should never have gone. It's just that I was having a bad night, and my mom was crying about my dad, which was ridiculous, because he was the worst father in the whole world and an even worse husband to her. I don't know why she still loves him. She's still got all his clothing in the closet, and she won't sell his car, which is sitting inside our garage. I just wanted to be around an adult who would be kind to me. But then I got to his house, and when I looked in the window, he was having a nice meal with his wife, and I figured he wouldn't want to talk to me. But then I decided maybe I'd wait until after they finished eating, and by the time I made up my mind that I should probably leave, somebody had called the police. I thought I was in big trouble, but then it turned out that Mr. Tuttle was the one in trouble. Principal Higgins started asking me all these questions about him and our relationship. I didn't know what she was talking about at first, but then she started asking me if Mr. Tuttle ever touched me. And that was when I knew what she meant. She was asking if he ever touched me in an inappropriate way. Which he never did, but he did touch me. Like one time when we were studying after school, I got to talking about my father and how hard it was when he came home drunk, and I started to cry, and Mr. Tuttle touched my shoulder. So yes, he did touch me, but not like that, not even close. Still, she saw my hesitation when answering her questions, and she seized on that. And then before I knew it, everyone in the school thought I was having an affair with Mr. Tuttle. Or else they didn't, and they thought I was a liar trying to get attention. But the worst part of all is what happened to Mr. Tuttle. He was just trying to help me. He felt bad for me because of my dad and because I had no friends and was in danger of failing math. I tried to tell everyone he was only being nice, nothing more. But then the parents started calling on him to resign. He had no choice. And now I've done it again. Even worse, it's not the first time. I've been to Nathaniel's house twice before without him knowing. I don't know exactly what I was thinking, except that I missed seeing Nathaniel after school like I usually did. And I started to get curious about what a dinner at his house would look like. It was only a 5-minute bike ride from my house. So when my mom went up to her bedroom for the evening, I slipped out the back door and rode over there. Stupid, stupid, stupid. It was depressing to watch Nathaniel having a happy couple's dinner with his wife and Mrs. Maddox and her husband. The only positive thing I could say was that Mrs. Maddox's husband was very affectionate with her, but Nathaniel barely touched Mrs. Bennett. And believe me, I was watching. Anyway, I'm super lucky I didn't get caught. There was a moment when Mrs. Bennett was taking out the trash, and I was terrified that she saw me. But then nothing happened. She thought she saw something, but it was too dark out. She didn't know who it was. Or so I thought. Until I get a message from Nathaniel through Snapflash during second period.
You were at my house last night. That was a big mistake.
I stare at the words on the screen until they disappear. It wasn't even a question. He knows I was there. Either he saw me out the window or else Mrs. Bennett told him I was there. I write back, I'm sorry. Then I get worried my history teacher is going to catch me on my phone and confiscate it. So I shove it back into my pocket, even though it's killing me not to see what Nathaniel is writing back to me. I'm sure he's angry with me. How angry? He couldn't possibly be so upset with me that he would end things. Would he? No, I can't believe that. But the idea of it gives me a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Our relationship is risky for so many reasons. He warned me that if anyone catches wind of it, we would have to stop seeing each other immediately. The idea of never being close to him again is physically painful. I would rather be buried in a tomb in the sea. As soon as the bell rings, I practically rip my phone out of my pocket. Sure enough, there's a message waiting for me, which I click to open.
The principal is going to talk to you about it. I did what I could to stop this. Deny everything.
And then a second message.
My entire life is in your hands.
Sure enough, I've barely made it to third period when an announcement over the loudspeaker instructs me to go to the principal's office. My legs are super wobbly as I walk down to the ground floor, past the main desk where Annie, the receptionist, sits with her bucket of oranges. Annie's smile is strained when she greets me, and it's no surprise when I get to Principal Higgins' office to find Mrs. Bennett waiting. I expected Nathaniel would be there too, and I'm not sure what it means that he isn't.
Adeline?
The principal looks at me through her half-moon spectacles and gestures at one of the plastic chairs in front of her desk.
Have a seat, please.
And close the door behind you.
Close the door behind you. This is not looking good so far.
Especially because I can see Mrs. Bennett has that pissed-off look on her face. Her already thin lips have completely disappeared. As I sit in the squeaky plastic chair, I try to make my face blank. I remember what Nathaniel told me.
Deny everything.
It must mean Mrs. Bennett isn't entirely sure she saw me.
Addie. Principal Higgins doesn't look any more pleased with me than Mrs. Bennett does.
I remember when she first called me into her office about Mr. Tuttle. She was so sweet and gentle with me. But that changed when she found out I was stalking him, a bit. Now she just looks like she's had it with me.
Mrs. Bennett says that she saw you in the bushes outside her house last night. Is this true? Deny everything.
No, of course not. I was home all night last night with my mom. Mrs. Bennett lets out an angry huff.
I saw you, Addie. You were in the bushes, and then you ran across my lawn.
Deny everything.
I don't know what to tell you. I was home all night. Like I said, my mom was home with me. You can ask her. If they do ask my mom, she will confirm that I was home all night. It's so easy to sneak out without her knowing. A twinge of doubt passes over Mrs. Bennett's face. I'm glad Nathaniel texted me to warn me, because if he hadn't, I probably would have confessed everything. But the more I think about it, the more I realize that denying it is the right thing to do. It was dark last night. She doesn't know what she saw. Principal Higgins continues to look skeptical.
Mrs. Bennett tells me that you have been having some conflicts with her, that you have been struggling in the class, not putting in an effort.
And she even caught you trying to look at another student's paper during an exam.
I did take a peek, I admit, hanging my head in shame. But Mrs. Bennett was nice about it. She even helped me find a tutor.
I chance a look over at Mrs. Bennett and offer her a smile. She does not return it.
I'm sorry you thought I would go to your house, I say. I would never do that, though.
I realize how weak my words must sound, given I was literally picked up by the police outside another teacher's house. So I quickly add, I learned my lesson after last time. Principal Higgins flashes Mrs. Bennett a look. Neither of them seem thrilled with me, but it's not like she has any proof.
Deny everything.
All right, Addie. The principal leans back in her chair. Whatever happened last night, I expect there will not be any repeat episodes. You can return to class now.
I get up from the plastic chair, astonished that nothing more has come of this. And most importantly, they didn't ask me anything about Nathaniel. I was so sure it was going to be like last time, when Principal Higgins was grilling me about me and Mr. Tuttle. I expected questions about whether Nathaniel has ever touched me, and I was already anxious about trying to answer them because I figured they would see the truth all over my face. But Mrs. Bennett assumed I was there entirely because of her, because she knows that I despise her, that I wish more than anything she wasn't in my life. And in that sense, she is right. Chapter 46. Addie. After the meeting with the principal, Nathaniel doesn't answer any of my text messages. By the time lunch rolls around, I'm almost hysterical, worrying that he hates me now. But he did try to protect me. He told me to deny everything, and the strategy worked. Even so, I've worked myself into a big ball of stress. While I'm sitting in the cafeteria, trying to force down a cheeseburger that tastes like it's 3 days old, Lotus plops down across from me with her own tray containing a veggie burger. I'm not excited to talk to her after the way she betrayed me, especially today. My poem might have won that contest if she hadn't intervened.
Hi, Addie,
she says. Hey, I mumble, not looking up from my burger.
Are you okay?
I'm great.
I drag one of my French fries through the little pool of ketchup I made on my tray. I'm just not interested in being friends with someone who is two-faced.
Lotus's jaw drops open.
Excuse me? How am I two-faced? I don't generally speak up for myself, but I'm having a hard day. I want Lotus to know that I know she betrayed me. And it's somewhat gratifying how flustered she looks.
Mr. Bennett was going to enter me in that poetry contest. And then you went to the principal about it and made him enter you instead.
She stares at me for a moment, an astonished expression on her face.
She had no idea I knew what she did.
Are you serious? Her lower lip juts out.
That isn't what happened at all.
Yeah, right.
It isn't, she insists. I never said a word.
Mr. Bennett took me aside a week after you told me about the contest, and he said he decided to go with my poem instead.
I can't believe she's lying right to my face. I get up out of my seat, grabbing the tray still mostly filled with food. I don't have any appetite, even if this burger were edible. And the fries are weirdly uncooked and yet soggy.
Whatever, I say.
Addie! She calls out my name, but she doesn't follow me or try to convince me of her lies. I'm glad because there's no way I would ever believe her. Nathaniel told me exactly what happened. Nathaniel, I've got to see him. Nathaniel has a free period now. And in the past, I had suggested sneaking off together since I am free at the same time. But he insisted meeting during school hours was far too risky. But I am losing my mind. and I don't think I can get through the day without seeing him. So I walk through the empty halls until I reach his classroom, hoping I'll find him there instead of in the teacher's lounge. Sure enough, Nathaniel is sitting at his desk, looking over some papers while noshing on a sandwich. I watch him for a moment, the same way I did last night and every day in class. He's so handsome. I love the curves of his face, his thick, dark hair, the way his brown ties match his eyes. And when he smiles at me, it gives me this wonderful, warm feeling. This maiden has no other thought than to love and be loved by him. But when he looks up now, he's not smiling.
Addie, he hisses at me. What are you doing here?
I slip into the room, closing the door behind me. I'm sorry. I'm freaking out.
Well, coming here isn't going to make that better.
He rises from his seat, a frown on his lips.
You should not have come to my house last night. That was a huge mistake.
I chew on my lower lip. I know.
Now you've put yourself on the radar. You've put us on the radar.
He shakes his head.
I can't believe you would do something so stupid.
The tears that have been pricking at my eyes since I went to the principal's office now threaten to fall. One escapes my right eye, and I quickly brush it away. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I feel so stupid. Nathaniel notices my tears, and that takes some of the fight out of him. He glances out the small window on the door to his classroom to confirm that the hallway is still empty. Then he comes around the desk.
Addie, don't cry.
I wipe my nose with the back of my hand before I end up with a snot bubble. If he sees a snot bubble come out of me, it is definitely over. No, I shouldn't say that. He wouldn't be so superficial. I don't want you to hate me. I made a dumb mistake.
Addie.
His eyes soften, and after one more look at the door, he reaches for my hands. I was so stupid to worry. Nathaniel and I are soulmates. He's not going to throw away what we have because of one stupid mistake I made. We're too important to each other.
I could never, ever hate you, he says. You've become my entire world. You're my soulmate. But we have to be a little bit more careful now, just for a little while. I don't want Eve to get suspicious.
So we can't meet today? I'm hoping he says yes. It's Friday, and my mother lets me stay out later on Friday because I don't have school the next day. He hesitates, then shakes his head.
Better not. Maybe next week.
Oh, God, I'll die before then. Next week? He flashes me a lopsided grin.
I know. I'm going to go out of my mind.
The idea of not being able to touch him or kiss him for an entire week is enough to make me want to scream. Impulsively, I reach out and grab his brown tie. I tug him closer to me, and even though I can tell he's nervous that we're in his classroom, he lets me do it. If we're not going to be able to go to the dark room for an entire week, I need something to hold me over. And he must feel the same way, because he leans the rest of the way over and kisses me more passionately than he ever has before. He laces his fingers into my hair, his lips mashing against mine. The kiss seems to last for an eternity, and it's painful to pull away from him. I could write a poem about that kiss, and I bet it would win that stupid contest.
We can't do this again, Nathaniel says in a stern voice. Not for a little while. I'll let you know when it's safe.
Can we still text? He considers this for a moment.
A little. Once or twice a day. And obviously only on Snap Flash.
I nod, trying to swallow down a lump in my throat. What am I going to do for a week without him? Nathaniel isn't just the best thing in my life. He's the only thing.
This is all Eve Bennett's fault. You better go, he tells me.
He gives my hand one last squeeze, and that's when the bell rings. I square my shoulders, turn around, and leave the classroom. I'm going to get through this, and someday the two of us are going to be together. That's what he promised me.
Chapter 47. Eve. I feel utterly unsatisfied after the meeting with Higgins. Addie Severson was outside my house last night, in the bushes. I have never been so sure of anything in my life. I saw her, first of all, and she has plenty of reasons to hate me. When we were in the supermarket that day, Art Tuttle warned me about her. He had a reason to warn me. She destroyed his life, whether she was trying to or not. And today, that girl lied right to my face. As soon as Addie left, I looked at Deborah Higgins and said, "She's lying." Deborah shook her head. "I agree with you, Eve. But what can we do? It's your word against hers. And she said she was home with her mother." What a load of crap. When I was a teenager, I did tons of things while my mother thought I was safely tucked away in my room. As far as I'm concerned, that was not an alibi, even if her mother did confirm the story, which she didn't. As soon as I got out of the principal's office, I texted Nate. She denied the whole thing. We were between classes, so his text back to me came quickly. Maybe it wasn't her. His response was so maddening, I wanted to throw the phone. Soon it will be time for my sixth period math class, when I will come face to face with Addie once again, and I am not up for the task. Deborah told me that for the second semester, she is planning to switch Addie to a different teacher. But we still have 2 months left before the term comes to an end. 2 months of having to deal with that girl. It was definitely her. I ran to Shelby in the teacher's dining area. I brought a salad for lunch and a piece of Tupperware, but I've barely touched it. How could she lie like that? Shelby shrugs. She's a teenager. That's what they do. It's like breathing for them. She hates me. I shudder slightly, thinking of the dirty look she was giving me yesterday in class. She really hates me. And now she's stalking me. But why? Shelby takes a bite of one of her carrot sticks. I mean, she was following Art around because he was nice to her. Yes, so? So you're not nice to her? Why would she go to your house? She sips from her Diet Coke. I mean, she's not dangerous. Do you really think she would stalk you because you wouldn't let her eat a sandwich in class? That's a little extreme, even for a teenager. Maybe. Now, if she were stalking Nate, that I could buy. She winks at me. I mean, all the female students have huge crushes on him. And then you say she joined his little poetry magazine? I can totally see her getting a little too obsessed. I freeze, a piece of lettuce lying limply in my mouth. I don't know how that thought didn't occur to me before. Maybe because when I was at the curb, I felt like she was watching me specifically. Somehow it didn't hit me that she could have been at the house to see somebody else. Oh my God. She's stalking Nate. This makes much more sense. I warned him about being too nice to her, and now she is doing the same thing to him that she did to Art Tuttle. And if he's not careful and doesn't handle it right, he's going to end up exactly like Art. I've got to warn him. He has to deal with this right away. I excuse myself from the table, and Shelby is likely happy to be able to discuss anything besides Addie Severson. There are still about 10 minutes left in the period, and Nate is almost certainly in his classroom. We won't have much time to talk, but
I can at least give him a heads up before he has her in his class. The halls are mostly empty, since we are in the middle of fifth period, and the heels of my Givenchy leather boots sound like gunshots as they echo through the empty space. I pass a girl with far too much black eye makeup, but that is far from the worst thing these teenage girls do. When I get to Nate's classroom, the door is closed, which strikes me as a little strange. I peer through the window on the door, and sure enough, Nate is inside. But he's not alone. He's with Addie Severson. I raise my hand to knock on the door, but before I do, something stops me. I take a step back, ducking slightly out of sight. If Nate was looking hard, he would see me, but not with a quick glance. Nate and Addie are deep in conversation. I don't know what they're saying to each other, but it looks like she's crying. What is he saying to her that is making her cry? Then again, it doesn't take a huge amount to make a teenage girl sob. Taking away their phone usually does it, in my experience. And then Nate reaches out and takes her hand. Okay, this isn't necessarily suspicious. She's crying, and he's comforting her. Granted, it's not the most appropriate way to comfort your student, but it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. Although he's not patting her hand, it seems more like he's holding it. At least 60 seconds have gone by, and his hand is still touching hers. Why is his hand still touching hers? This has reached the upper limit of appropriateness. But then something happens to make me forget all about the hand-holding. Something happens that makes hand-holding seem like, well, hand-holding. Something that makes me want to throw up the few leaves of my salad that I managed to choke down. He's kissing her. No, he's not just kissing her. It looks like he's trying to figure out how her lunch tasted. That kiss. That's not a first kiss. That's a kiss between two people who have kissed many times before, and probably done a lot of other things. And now it all makes sense. I understand why Addie hates me so much. I understand why she was sneaking around the bushes on the side of my house. I understand why every time I try to tell Nate about something she's done, he defends her. I understand why my husband has zero interest in sex with me, except when he wants me to do something to help her. That bastard is cheating on me. With her. Chapter 48. Eve. I don't know if I've ever been this angry in my entire life. Part of me wants to burst into the classroom and bust them on the spot, in front of the students and teachers who will soon be filtering out of classrooms. It's what he deserves, after all. I imagine the shock on his face, morphing into humiliation as everyone discovers what he has done. But I don't do it. I recognize that if I bust Nate here now, I will ruin three lives. His, mine, and Addie's. He deserves to have his life ruined, but I don't. If I make a scene and expose him this way, I will never be able to continue working in the school. It will be too humiliating, and his shame will taint me as well. As for Addie, the truth is, she doesn't deserve it either. Whatever else I can say about her, she's only 16 years old. She's a child. It's not her fault she fell in love with her handsome English teacher. It was Nate's responsibility to keep this from happening. That's why I don't expose the two of them in front of everyone. But I do one thing. I take a photo. The age of consent in the state is 16. So Nate won't go to jail for this. It's not statutory rape. But his teaching career will be over. My husband will be disgraced, and everyone will find out about it. My life as I know it is over. I walk back to my own classroom in a daze. I don't know how I'm going to teach a math class in 5 minutes. I'll have to assign the kids some problems to do and just make them work on it for most of the period. All my lesson plans are out the window. I reached the door to my classroom just in time to bump right into Addie Severson. She's got a little smile playing on her lips, recently bruised from kissing my husband. But the smile drops right off her face when she sees me. She doesn't want to be in this class any more than I want to have her here. She bows her head and walks quietly to her seat, dropping her bag on the floor. I have to remind myself again that this isn't her fault. Nate took advantage of her vulnerability. I've been a teacher long enough to know that some girls are more suggestible than others. Some are more likely to succumb to a crush on their favorite teacher. It's not her fault. It's not. I'd like you all to take your textbooks out, and we're going to work on the problems on page 137, I tell the class, quietly. I assign far too many problems to do, knowing that they'll be working on them until the bell rings. There are other math teachers who do this with alarming frequency, but I've never resorted to this tactic before. I'm desperate. I drop down behind my desk, and the first thing I do is dig out my phone. After a brief hesitation, I send a message to Jay. I need to see you tonight. I sit behind my desk, holding my breath, waiting for his response, not sure if he'll be able to message me in the middle of the day. Thankfully, it comes a few minutes later.
I'm not closing the store tonight, so we can't meet there.
I don't care. We can drive somewhere.
Are you sure, Eve?
Please. We arrange an out-of-the-way place to meet. Jay is absolutely the only person I can talk to about this. If I tell anyone else, the secret will be out. But I trust Jay to be discreet. I know too many of his own secrets. Jay will help me figure out what to do. He may not know anything about school politics, but he has common sense, and he's a good person. But one way or another, I am not going to allow Nate to get away with this. Chapter 49. Eve. After school is over, Jay and I meet in the parking lot of a McDonald's not too far from the shoe store. We park at opposite ends of the lot, and I walk over to his car and slip inside the passenger seat, and he drives off. Under other circumstances, I might find the secrecy thrilling, but right now, all I can see is my husband's mouth on that little girl's lips. Thank you for coming, I tell him as I dig the heels of my boots into the carpet. I'm not entirely sure what he blew off for me, but I appreciate it.
So what's going on?
Jay asks me. I open my mouth to tell him the entire story, but before I can get a word out, I burst into tears. Jay glances over at me, a slightly panicked look on his face. He keeps driving until he finds a quiet street without any houses overlooking us. He pulls over and parks the car.
Eve.
He reaches over to envelop me in a hug.
What happened? Talk to me.
I sob into his big, strong arms as he strokes my hair to calm me down. It takes several minutes to get myself under control enough to tell him the entire story. He knows the first part, about the problems I've had with Nate and how distant he has been. And then when I get to the part about finding Nate and Addie kissing in the classroom today, his body stiffens. He pulls away, his eyes wide.
You're kidding,
he says.
You really saw that?
I nod slowly.
That piece of shit! He cracks his right knuckles. Jay looks furious.
And part of me is scared that he might walk up to Nate and punch him right in the face. And part of me wants him to do it.
That is unbelievable.
I know. I shut my eyes, but when I do, the image of the two of them kissing doesn't go away. I doubt it ever will. I don't know what to do.
Maybe you should kill him.
I look up at Jay's face, and he's not smiling.
But he doesn't mean that.
Although right now, the idea is tempting. Really? What do you think I should do? Should I go to the principal?
He shakes his head. If you go to the principal, everybody in the world is going to know about this. Is that what you want?
Speaking with the principal is the proper protocol here. But he's right. There's no way this will be dealt with discreetly, as much as they might try.
The situation with Art Tuttle is testimony to that, even though he never did anything wrong.
That's not what I want.
So then, he says, you have to lay out an ultimatum for him. You have to do whatever you can to make sure this stops immediately and never happens again. And also,
he reaches for my hand.
You have to get out of this marriage.
He's right about that part. I've got to leave Nate. That is not negotiable. I lift my head, looking into Jay's eyes, wondering for the first time if there's any chance at all of a future with the two of us. I know there isn't, but there are moments when I like to fantasize that it's possible. But it doesn't matter. Whether I can be with Jay or not, I can't be with Nate anymore.
You can do this.
He squeezes my hand.
Don't be afraid of him. You've got this.
He has confidence in me. But the problem is,
he doesn't know my husband the way I do.
Chapter 50. Eve.
By the time Nate gets home, I am more than a bit drunk. He doesn't arrive until nearly 3 hours after school ended, which begs the question of what he has been doing all that time. I don't know if he has been with her or doing actual school-related duties. If he's not an idiot, he knows he should be staying away from Addie Severson in the wake of her being found outside our house.
Although he must not be thinking entirely clearly if he kissed her right inside his own classroom. As for me, after Jay brought me back to the McDonald's to retrieve my car, I drove around for a while, but eventually ended up back home. I tried to grade some papers, but that was an exercise in futility. Soon after that, I went for my bottle of wine. Unfortunately, all we had was about a quarter of a bottle left of Cabernet. But I did find half a bottle of vodka. When I hear the front door opening, I've been in the process of trying on all my shoes. Yes, all of them. I don't know why, but there's something comforting about a fashion show for my feet. Whenever I'm feeling bad about something, I go straight to my shoes. That's something Nate could never understand. But Jay gets it. Nate doesn't call out my name when he walks inside. He never does. Maybe he's hoping I'm not home so he can jerk off thinking about her. I don't want to know what thoughts are going through his head.
I just want him out of my life.
I toss all my shoes back in the closet, except for the Louis Vuitton pumps that I wore on my birthday. I slide them onto my feet. Then I head downstairs. Nate is in the living room, peeling off his black coat. He plucks the beanie off his hair and runs a hand through his thick locks quickly to smooth them down. As I descend the stairs, I can't help but think back to the first time I laid eyes on my husband and how handsome I thought he was. It was love at first sight, or so I thought. I always believed we would be together forever.
I was so stupid.
Hello. It's only after the word comes out that I realize my speech is slurring slightly. I should not have had that last shot of vodka. I need to be clear-headed for this.
You're home.
Yeah?
He hangs up his coat in the hall closet.
Did you get dinner started?
No. I grab onto the banister to keep from swaying. I need to talk to you.
Okay.
He loosens his tie around his neck and squints at me.
Have you been drinking?
This is not exactly how I wanted the conversation to go, but it doesn't matter. I'm not waiting one more minute to discuss this with him. It needs to end tonight. I step toward him, grabbing onto the sofa this time for balance. I don't know how to begin this conversation, but I plow forward anyway. I know about you and Addie Severson, I blurt out. Nate's hands freeze on the loop of his tie.
Excuse me?
I know, I repeat. I have to focus to keep my words from slurring, but he needs to know how serious I am. I know what you're doing with her. I know that's why she was outside our house the other night.
That's crazy, he laughs. Come on, Eve. You really think I would do something like that? With Addie?
He shakes his head.
Where would you get such a silly idea? I think you've had a bit too much to drink. Do you want me to make you a cup of coffee?
Oh, he is good. My husband is smooth. If it were simply a rumor I heard, I would probably be dismissing it right now. Then again, I always knew he was a liar.
I saw you, I spit at him. I saw you kissing her in your classroom during fifth period.
Oh, the easy smile drops off his face.
I see. What do you have to say for yourself?
Nate tugs at his tie until it comes loose, then he drops it on the floor. He hangs his head.
I don't know what I can say. I made a massive mistake. Addie had a crush on me, and I thought I could handle it. Then, today, she kissed me. I let it go on a second too long. I know I did. It was stupid, and I'll never let it happen again. I'll make it very clear to her how inappropriate it was.
I clench my fists. I want to pound them against his chest until he's bruised and bleeding.
No, I saw it. You kissed her.
You weren't there. You don't know what happened.
I saw it.
A vein pulses in my temple. It feels like there's a very real possibility that it will burst and kill me before we complete this conversation. Before my husband admits to me that he did the thing I watched him do. Part of me wishes it would happen. But another part of me wants him to suffer.
Did you tell Higgins?
Nate finally says. Not yet.
Have you told anyone else?
No.
I did tell Jay, but I'm not going to mention that to my husband.
I see. He frowns, his entire forehead crumbling.
Will you?
I'm not sure yet. I rest back against the arm of the sofa, because my legs feel wobbly. I haven't decided.
Is there?
He takes a step toward me, one arm partially outstretched.
Is there anything I can do to convince you not to?
I look down at his arm like he's offering me poison.
If you touch me ever again, I'm going to scratch your eyes out.
Right.
Sorry.
He steps back again.
Okay, fine. So let's talk about this. What do you want from me?
I want a divorce.
He doesn't even hesitate.
Done.
Wow, that was a blow.
As much as I want him gone and out of my life, somehow I thought or maybe even hoped he might fight for our marriage a little more. Also, I say, the house is mine.
But this house...
The house is mine.
Nate grits his teeth.
Fine, take the house.
Also, I add, you need to end your relationship with Addie immediately. Like tonight or tomorrow. You need to let her down easy, but make it very clear that you will never see her again. It needs to happen now. Don't wait for school on Monday.
He had to see that one coming. Fine, he says.
Is that all?
I have one final demand that I came up with after talking to Jay. This is going to be the hardest one for him, but it's not negotiable. You need to resign from Kasem High, I say.
You can't ever work as a teacher for children again.
Nate sucks in a breath.
What? You can't be serious. This is my livelihood, Eve.
You can still teach. You can teach adult education, but no children. Never again.
Eve, come on.
He chokes out.
I can't possibly agree to that. All the other stuff, fine. But I'm not going to give up teaching high school.
Fine. Then we can go to the principal and let her decide. Nate pushes past me and walks over to the sofa, where he sinks into the cushions. He leans forward and presses his fingertips into his temples.
Please, don't do this. Be reasonable. You have to be reasonable.
This is as reasonable as it gets.
Really, you ought to be in jail. She's 16. That's an adult in Massachusetts.
Yes, I'm sure that's how you think of her. Like an adult. I shake my head in disgust.
You need to decide. If you don't resign, I'm going to go to the principal about it.
He lifts his face to stare up at me.
And you're sure she would believe you?
Why wouldn't she? He rises from the sofa and lets out a snort.
Everyone at the school knows you're a complete mess, Eve.
You're not exactly trustworthy. Excuse me? What does that mean?
For starters, you're drunk at 6 in the evening.
He ticks it off on his fingers.
Also, you hoard shoes. It's really nuts. If anyone got a look at our closet, they would lock you up.
My face burns. He's decided to play dirty, as it turns out. I shouldn't have expected less. I only have like a dozen pairs in my closet. Plenty of women have that many shoes.
You think I don't know about all the shoes you keep in that giant luggage?
I did not think he knew about those shoes, but it makes sense he would. I imagine he was in the closet one day looking for a suitcase for a trip, and he discovered my stash. The thought of him knowing my secret makes me burn with humiliation, but it doesn't change anything.
Really, he says. It's your word against mine. Well, mine and Addie's. She'll never admit to anything.
Right. Well, I lift a shoulder. Good thing I snapped a photo of the two of you kissing. What I'd really love to have is a photo of Nate's face when I drop that little nugget. All the color drains out of him, and his whole body seems to sag. Yes, I have a photo of him kissing his 16-year-old student. He has no power over me.
Fine, he growls under his breath. You win, Eve. I'll resign.
With those satisfying words, he turns away from me and stomps up the stairs. I have no idea where he's going, so I follow him, taking the steps two at a time. I find him in our bedroom. He has hauled a duffel bag out of our closet, and he's throwing clothing into it haphazardly. What are you doing? I say.
Packing.
He looks at me like I'm completely stupid.
You're kicking me out, aren't you? Am I allowed to bring some clothes with me, or do I only get to keep the shirt on my back?
You can pack.
Very generous of you.
Nate rifles through a dresser drawer and grabs his favorite hooded sweatshirt, the one with a hole in the pocket, and tosses it into his bag.
You know I was always good to you. I never lost my temper. I never complained when you bought 5 billion pairs of shoes.
He kicks the luggage containing all my hidden shoes.
I came home every single night. What more did you want from me?
He looks up at me, and I realize this isn't a rhetorical question. He truly believes all those things were enough to make him a good husband. That you can check all the right boxes and it's okay, even if you don't love your wife. Even if you cheat on her with a little girl. There's no point in trying to explain to him why what he's done is so wrong. Instead, I go back downstairs and let him pack in peace. After today, he won't be my problem ever again.
Chapter 51. Addie. I am in the middle of doing my history homework when I get the message on Snapflash. I'm surprised to see it. Nathaniel is the only one who messages me on there, and he told me earlier today that we were going to cool it for a little while. So I don't understand why there's a new message waiting for me. But of course, it's not like I could resist. Especially if the alternative is learning about the feudal states. I open the app and find a message waiting for me. It's short and to the point.
Eve knows. A cold sensation slides down my spine. Eve knows.
This is the catastrophe that we both knew had to be avoided at all costs. Mrs. Bennett knows about the two of us. And that means...
I'm sorry, Addie. I can't see you ever again.
If somebody took a knife from the kitchen and stabbed me right in the chest, it would be about this painful. I don't understand how it could be over, just like that. Yes, I get that it's bad that his wife knows about us. But Nathaniel and I are soulmates. It doesn't seem possible that she could snap her fingers and it's over just like that. Nathaniel's words disappear from the screen, and it's almost like I imagined them. But I didn't. With shaking hands, I type in a question. Did she tell Principal Higgins?
No, she didn't tell her. But she says she will if I don't do everything she says.
What does she want you to do? There's no response for long enough that I wonder if he has abandoned the conversation. But finally, his reply appears on the screen.
She said that I have to end it with you immediately and resign from teaching.
The first part is awful enough, but the second part cuts me. Resign? Nathaniel is an incredible teacher. He has been the only teacher who has truly believed in me and definitely the best poet in the whole school. Maybe the only poet in the whole school. How can Mrs. Bennett force him to resign? She's evil, and not just regular evil. She's cartoon villain evil. Another message from Nathaniel pops up on the screen.
She also kicked me out of the house. I hope the ceiling falls on her and kills her.
So do I.
If she were dead, I could still keep my job and we could still be together.
I stare at the words on the screen.
If she were dead, I could still keep my job and we could still be together.
I read them 5 times before they vanish, and I am left wondering once again what he really meant.
If she were dead, I could still keep my job and we could still be together.
Well, it's true. If Mrs. Bennett is the only one who knows about the two of us, then if she weren't around... Addie? My mother's voice rings out from the other side of my closed bedroom door. She knocks once, and when she doesn't get an answer, she barges right in. It's like she can't contemplate that I might be doing something in here that would require privacy.